the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is November 21st, 2017, 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. I want to thank you for joining us. You know, this is the week of Thanksgiving, and I have to say, I'm extremely grateful for this radio station, for this venue, for our listeners, for people who care enough to listen in and find out from people who have been affected by, just like yourself, but more grotesquely, and by activists, by people who are working to stop the technologists and the nuclear industry from really just decimating us and our planet. And we do have hope here. So thank you. I'm very, very grateful for that. Today we have with us a friend of our show, Erica Dugan, who is basically, her family were victims, and she has taken action. She's speaking out, and I really appreciate that. And I'm very thankful for you too, Erica. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I am thankful for being on your show, and I am thankful that I came from a good family and a good community that I hope will find a way to do what's right for its people and put the people back in the driver's seat, I guess. And you've helped me to figure out I need to be more instrumental in making that happen.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to hear that, because you really can't, I think that you're a really awesome voice. You called me up just for some background. Somebody from St. Louis suggested that she contact me, and she did. She called me up. We started talking, and I said, yeah, let's, because it's not directly related to nuclear. Why don't you tell people who, a little bit of background about yourself?
Right. I am from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and so is my husband. We went to school together, but we didn't date and marry until after, when I was in college. And we moved from, we had bought a house in Tulsa when we got married. I went to college at OU, the University of Oklahoma in Norman. But we established ourselves in Tulsa with jobs. And he had saved for a home before he decided, you know, he liked me enough to ask me to marry me and all of that. He had planned he was going to buy a home instead of rent a home, and have an investment in what he was paying for. And so when we got married, he bought that home just before we got married, and so we had a home from the get-go. We were never renters, we were always homeowners. And then we at one point, after we had our first two children, we were paying for private schools there, and we knew some friends that lived out in the Broken Arrow which is a suburb. I had also worked for the Home Builders Association, and I knew about the development being built out there, and I knew how wonderful they were with fishing ponds, sidewalks, parks, and that was the kind of life I wanted for my kids. The way that we were able to play with our neighbors on our street and go to the public school with our neighborhood kids, I decided, you know, I love Montessori education model, but at some point I felt like public school would teach my children more, you know, what the real world was like and give them more exposure to working within the systems. And I thought they needed to transition from Montessori to public school. And I liked that this was a neighborhood school and you could go to school with your neighbors, play with them in the driveway, play on sports teams with them, and it would give them that sense of community. And so that's why we moved from the neighborhood I'd grown up in Tulsa out to the suburbs. And after we moved, our children got sick one by one. Our animals got sick, and eventually I and my husband got sick also. And in ways that we had never known in our family, and it had changed things a lot. And you know, we were always very connected in our community, had lots of friends in our community that were in different business areas that helped us through our journey and helped us get started and figure out, you know, what is wrong. And as they would put it, we just need to find answers. And we ended up over many years finding answers that even the people pointed us to the experts to find the answers were shocked to find, because they didn't understand, didn't know what was going on. So what we did find was that there was high levels of two chemicals in our water is what the experts identified. We've come to find out, you know, there may have been more that just weren't identified, but those two chemicals at least, we can correlate with our lengthy and very descriptive medical journey that we had to take because things just wouldn't get better. That journey has, you know, led to all this information and ended up putting us with experts who tested our home. And that's when we found these things. And then we have all the evidence of the horrible medical things that happened to multiple family members that points to things that are just in something as simple as what's called a material safety data sheet for anybody that works in that sort of industry. And we have
excuse me, what industry are you talking that sort? What do you mean by that sort?
Any industry, if you work with chemicals or hazardous substances, it's been a federal OSHA requirement for a very long time, I don't know how long, but that you keep those sheets in your businesses.
I think those regulations just got thrown out, Erica.
Oh, really? That's lovely. Well, they were there when it happened to us and probably when it happened to others. So, but those OSHA required sheets, they're called material safety data sheets. And I do remember from working with home builders who had worked in other industries like concrete and asphalt, I do remember even, you know, being contracted to help them build some of those sheets to make sure that they had them to meet their legal requirements. You know, they had them on hand. If someone was injured,
yeah,
they were supposed to hand them out.
What's the name of those sheets?
Material safety data sheets. A lot of times they're acronym down to MSDS sheets. And I know many businesses in our area that knew they had to meet that standard and knew they had to have those on hand. And if they didn't have them, they would ask people to create them for them, pulling the data from, you know, other businesses that had them and try to, you know, make sure they had something on hand. That because it tells you, if you're interested in that specifically, it tells you what the chemical is, what kind of symptoms it will cause you, what long-term effects it will cause. And, you know, just gives that kind of information, and it's usually no more than 2 pages. It's just like a front and back deal. So, and you can even use that to hopefully show your physician, and then the physician has a quick explanation of what's happened to you.
Okay, I beg your pardon. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, remember when I said that I thought that those regulations had been reversed? That wasn't what I remembered. I remembered that there was a, they said that the fracking companies don't have to disclose chemicals linked to concerns.
Right.
So that's what the EPA's position is now, that we just don't need to know.
Well, that has been going on for a while. I'm not surprised to hear that they're holding that position, is how I would say it.
That I have to say, hearing your summary like that, how you and your husband met, and you actually sold your house that was in a safe area and moved to an unsafe area because of fracking. And
No, we didn't know about the fracking.
I know. You didn't know about the fracking, but you moved from a home that was, you know, a safe neighborhood as far as we know, into a neighborhood that happened to be damaged because of a fracking damage, and then to go to school, though, you moved them from a good safe school to a place where actually made them sick, so that they could go to school thinking you were helping them further their education and in the world and be more part of the world and get part of the system, instead of leaving them in this little private school home.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Where you didn't have friends next door that went to school with you and all of that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so you moved them from this thinking that you were helping them, and actually here they were just, and knowing, this is the hard part for me, in hearing these stories where families are affected by fracking. How do the people who are these city officials and the people who are making these decisions, I don't know how they sleep with themselves. How do they deny the evidence?
Well, I know I try to wrap my head around that. And, you know, that industry is very prevalent. So my friends are in that industry. I have people who rely on the wealth from that industry for their own families.
Mm-hmm.
Families that live in that very neighborhood. Families that lived across the street from me.
Wow.
You know? So it's
their families must be getting sick, though, also, right? Like, people in that neighborhood must have been getting sick. It wasn't just you guys, right?
Right.
And still they work at this place because it gives them a lot of money.
Well, and I, you know, maybe it is that we haven't come out and really said. And, you know, there's just all of these things that point to that and make us think that. And we are so reliant upon those industries. And we can't just say,
no way. Yeah, I get you.
Shut it down. Our country would shut down. We can't do that.
Exactly. But what we can do is insist on extremely safe management of it. That's the issue, is that there's been a complete disregard for safety and public health. 100%.
Well, yeah, and I do know what I was told, those chemicals that we know we were exposed to, that we know match the things in the MSDS sheet, that we know match the research that has been done on those chemicals with mice and now humans also, it matches all of that. Those parts, mm-hmm. that I can exactly match those up.
Wow.
I can say that, and I've been told that those chemicals were used in my water system to remove the chemicals they knew that were getting into the system from fracking. That's what I was told by a group of lawyers. So that makes me say that I, you know, feel like if they've done all this legal research and they know environmental law and they would tell me that, then that's how I feel that we can say that. But I do also know that the infrastructure broke down and there was holes in the infrastructure. We've talked about this in other shows.
Yeah.
There was There was drilling in mining areas from the past. There was contamination from mining areas from the past. There was the biggest Superfund site in the state that wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't exactly by it, but it was near it. And they've admitted that they found that's got into the groundwater. Well, if it got into the groundwater and there's holes in the pipes, how do we know that's not what got in the pipes too? So it's just, it's, What it is that we've not given resources. We built this environmental protection agency.
Exactly.
We protect health. And we built the agency. We meant to do good with that as a country. But then we...
It got co-opted. That's essentially, it got co-opted by big business. It became an, instead of Environmental Protection Agency, it became every polluter's advocate. I mean, kind of, that's what happened. But you were right, we did underfund it grotesquely.
And maybe we didn't know how big the problem was when we built it. You know, maybe we didn't, and I've heard old stories, like back to Lois with Left Canal, and I've heard the story of Jan Schlickman, who did the civil action book, and the people of Woburn. And I felt like the Woburn case, listening to that, learning about it, of course I wasn't in it, and I know it's quite different when you're in it, but it felt like the EPA really kind of tried to help with that one.
Well, it's like in Westlake, they're trying, but...
How to do it.
I mean, I think they're trying, Erica, but look, they are underfunded. This is really, I think that what we need to do as advocates for humanity is that we need to demand that they use that same amount of funding. Like, okay, so these people, we need the scientists that are working in the industry. What we need to do is fund science, real science, and pay people to figure out, how do we remediate? How do we turn things back? How do we fix our water? How do we fix the soil? How do we get this stuff out of here? You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to stop using this stuff, but we can certainly start paying attention to what to do with it.
Right, and we are, well, I don't know if it's privately being done. I know there's been some NIH money go to some...
And CELDEF. Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund has done a lot. In fact, if you want to hear about different stories, go to their website. They help people in communities who have been affected assert their rights. So, and in fact, tell us what's happened with yourself. Before the show, I asked you what was new, and let people know, because you are taking action, and I'm very proud of you for that.
Well, I did file a federal complaint, and I'll go ahead and... go ahead and give you the actual case number in case some, you know, in this world it, things can go away. So I'll give you the case number. DOKW-517CV-001221-001. And so that is in the United States District Court, Western District of Oklahoma is where I've filed it, even though this happened to us in Eastern District and Western District, and then in other states through healthcare providers. And after consulting with many advisors over the years and looking at doing things like a tort claim, a toxic tort claim, just looking at all the legal problems we were having and the social problems we were having from not dealing with the legal problems. I had someone bring to me the idea of a RICO complaint, and someone that is in the legal profession, and how they explained it to me was, what RICO is it's the racketeering influence, basically organized crime. It was put into place a long time ago to stop mafia-like activity. You might think of like the Al Capone days or something like that. That's probably when it started being used, I guess, but I'm not a law historian. And how they brought it to me was, you know, the things that are happening to you with people creating alternate facts and your healthcare records and, you know, not addressing things that the standard of care says they have to address, committing malpractice and not caring that they commit malpractice, flat out harassing you through the insurance company, through the healthcare provider's office, all of these things are in RICO, and also how our government offices, agencies had a duty to act.
Right.
They did not, and they did not take their duty either seriously or to the level that it should have been taken for the findings that were real in there, that were scientific,
mm-hmm.
and the experts provided to them. It's not like I just said, hey, I've heard about this fracking and I think I have it. I never even said anything about fracking. I didn't know it came from fracking. I didn't know there was a problem with fracking. I didn't know these chemicals had anything to do with fracking. I didn't know what these chemicals even were when they were brought to me by the experts. I am a journalist who went to, you know, I thought at one point early on that I wanted to go into business law, and I started taking business classes, and I realized the teacher that I had for algebra that was maybe more interested in sports than teaching me algebra, it had cause effects on me where I couldn't do the math and the business and the chemistry, and I chose to focus my strengths on writing and telling story, the story for someone that's true. And my logical self that has to tell the truth made journalism a very good fit for me.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I had always been a person who, you know, I would stand up to the person treating someone else unjustly, because I look back at my mother, and that's what I lived with my mother. You know, if someone in the community wasn't being treated right and everybody else were talking behind their back, she'd go and tell them, you know, hey, you're not being treated right, and so-and-so and so-and-so are talking behind your back, and I think this is crap, and, you know. So that was a part of me, and that made sense for me to switch my major to journalism and learn journalism, even though I didn't see myself as a writer, and I became a writer, and I became a journalist, and it was always a good fit for the fundamentals of my own being. But
you've always been logical in every conversation, and you're like Donna Gilmore, who runs SanOnofreSafety.org. Sticks strictly to the facts. If she cannot back it up with facts, she won't attest to it. She won't suggest to it. She only talks about things. Because I say, like just now, I'm like, oh, yeah, I thought I heard about that, and then I had to double check myself. I'm willing to make that type of a statement and double check. But you and Donna have this type of character where, like, strict, straight line, and that's it. And the RICO Act, by the way, passed in 1970.
Okay.
So this is why I appreciate you. And, you know, this is where it makes the world go round, is like it takes all of us. So please go ahead with where you're at with your case on this. By the way, would you slower repeat that number?
Oh, sure. It is. Again, it's in the Western District Court, which is federal court, and it is D as in dog, OKW.
What do you mean?
Western.
Okay, what does that mean, okay? D is in dog.
I think the D stands for district. I think the OK is, of course, for Oklahoma, and the W is for Western,
okay.
For Western District. And then there's numbers after it that, I, being a pro se litigant, I can't tell you what these mean yet. Maybe I'll learn in my future. 517-CV-001-221-001. And that's the full registered case number. You can sometimes look it up by a shorter number that is within that number. It's CIV-17-1221-R. But it's all, like, those numbers correlate and they go together, and one isn't different than the other. It shouldn't be. So, but that's helpful. And
so it starts with 517, right?
The stamp on my paper.
OKW 517 or 57?
Well, the long case number is DOKW 517CB 001221001.
Got it.
The stamp on my actual case, they shorten it, and it's CIB.
Awesome.
17-1221. And I noticed the shortened number on my receipt has an R after that, but I don't know what that means.
Okay.
But my husband had no trouble. We've already looked in the PACER system.
What statute on RICO did you list this lawsuit?
Well, mine is actually a complaint. So I'm basically giving my facts and asking the judge to help me to fit this into the RICO legislation. And what I have requested in my complaint specifically is I have said, one, you know, we have all these facts that this really did happen to us, and we obviously need remedy for that. And so my first part, that is kind of a civil part, is asking for immediate, injunctive, and declaratory relief, and explains to him that, you know, I have people whose lives are at risk, and I need to take care of that, and I need to make sure we continue to be able to make a living when others have blocked our ways to make a living, or we have been too sick to make our living like we were. So I need relief to allow us to continue our living and make sure we get the care that we absolutely need, and not just the absolutely part, but that we need to feel good so we can help you with part two. And part two, I have asked for criminal RICO, and I have asked for, there's a federal process that has to kind of do discovery on that and decide if these problems are of organized crime or not. And we have had to give particulars to show that they sure point to that they are of organized crime. And so that's basically what my complaint does.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have four different exhibits. My first exhibit focuses on you know, what is actually there that happened, and it was related to the home in the area. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, our reports, that some of those I showed you early, reports that show that we had the exposure, it was found in our home, it was found in by the state agency in our home later, and they proved where it was in the line and just not in our home, and all, you know, all of that detail that we had. Mm-hmm. Then I also show where it crept over to the bluebell plant by our house and got in the ice cream.
Right. We talked about that.
And I showed where I had proof that I had asked the EPA to add a monitoring site that coincidentally and strangely would have been between my house and the bluebell plant.
Right.
And I have proof where they denied me that ability to just simply put a monitoring site to watch the levels of those chemicals that they found in my home. Between my house and what we found later to be bluebell. So it's like, you know, my female gut was telling them the right thing, that we at least needed to keep up with what's going on with these things, at least. I asked for that, at the very least, and they said no. And then here we had this other findings in the future, and we had deaths in other states, not to mention, you know, the deaths that aren't directly related to a product or the water, you know, but this one does directly relate back. The contaminant was actually found in the drain. The researcher that studied the chemicals can fully explain how when you let those chemicals into the water system and let them stay out of balance, or they, you know, are misbalanced with weather changes, season changes, it allows bacteria to creep into there. He calls it like the balance of inorganic and organic chemistry matter. Like I said, that's stuff that I am not qualified to talk about. But even had his information in there as part of that first exhibit and tried to really lay out those facts of how can you say this is not a problem that needs absolute addressing and is damaging people and needs help, you know. So I've kind of laid that all out in exhibit one. Exhibit two, that was 135 pages. Exhibit two is 44 pages. And it gives examples that prove government actors engaged in what are called predicate acts in RICO legislation. And they even lead to fraud, conspiracy to commit fraud, extortion, mail fraud, and wire fraud. And any more wire fraud is something that you fax, something that you've said on the phone, something that you've sent by email, I think falls into wire fraud too. So that you understand that, because that's not a term. That's kind of a 70s term. I don't think it's a new term, so that's why I explain that. But so I gave examples of that. And then in Exhibit 3, I give examples of how that went over into, you know, it wasn't just with government actors. It went into insurance and healthcare, you know, even directly to the consumer. And that's a big part of RICO, too. When I went to learn about RICO, is if it infiltrates the economy and if it infiltrates different business sectors of the economy, and this may or may not involve government, it doesn't have to. I don't think RICO was necessarily designed to put the government check in, but that's what I saw learning about RICO, that this is the legal measure that can check and balance things. And it's weird, as I was getting towards the end of this, I've been watching a lawyer who's followed the VA stories of people who aren't getting appropriate care from the VA, and he is trying to fight it in the court system. I guess he was someone who was a serviceman that was injured himself, and his injury wasn't maybe as visible as my understanding from reading. I followed his columns for a while. And so he went to become a lawyer for different representatives and weren't getting what they needed from the VA. And he came to discover all of these kinds of unjust problems that these people were facing, as I have with just figuring out that what's happening to my family is unjust, but I've also come to find there are things happening to other families, and there are blame instances being put on other families for things that didn't necessarily cause the problem. For instance, I have a friend who we were talking, and her child, it was older than my child, whose kidneys recently had a problem. And she was telling me she thought it was her because, and she lived in our same area, not in our neighborhood, but close by. Mm-hmm. She thought it was because her older child decided to smoke with other children at school or something. And she thought what made it where. So there's these blame things out there that shift that thought away.
That's what we've been trained to do. That's true.
What's really going on? But you think about, okay, why is the person who's not drinking, who's not smoking, doing
still getting sick? Exactly.
And that's where our family was. We weren't doing all that. So,
and so exactly then, who are you suing?
Our defendant list, I could read it to you, is our home insurance company, because we talked about this a lot, my husband and I, and we said, you know, who is really at fault for not standing by us and supporting us? Well, we had paid for a home insurance policy with the same company consistently. We didn't hop around or get better rates from anyone. I teased my husband because he always wanted to do that, but I was like, no, I like this agent, and if anything ever happens, we have a good relationship, and then we stick it out. But basically, we had been with them for, gosh, I think like 20 years from our first home to this home.
And that's a long time to be. Yeah,
we had only had like two silly claims, like a leaky roof or, you know, something that wasn't much skin off their back. We did have a claim when we first moved in the house where the water system backed up into our house in this one that had the water problems that we found later. And but it still was a pretty inexpensive claim because we called, we had a good relationship with the agent, we brought the restoration company out. And as far as, you know, costly claims go, it was still a very minimal cost to our company. So it's not like we're someone who had overused our policy and they shouldn't help us, or we'd come up with other things and they paid out too much. You know, we weren't that kind of person. We didn't have accidents. We didn't have any car accidents much to speak of. I had been insured with the same company on my car since I was on my parents' policy. My parents had been with the same company and the same agent for, you know, their decades. So there was a lot of continuity of service there. And for them to allow us, we paid for an environmental rider on our policy because I knew that I am very allergic to mold, and I'd heard horror stories of people who get mold in their home and have to pay for everything to be redone, and I just didn't ever want to be in that place, and we had talked about that early on, and all the years we had that policy, we paid for this extra rider. So when this came back, and we had doctors telling us, you know, we don't think you've got all of it. We think you need to do more testing on your home. And we checked the price of the testing, and we couldn't afford it. We went to the insurance company and said, we have this rider. I don't know about the testing, but I do know that I can't afford the testing. And I do know that the rider specifically says, if my house is unlivable because of, you know, something that's contaminated it, then you're supposed to pay for me another place to live. And it was kind of worded vaguely where, you know, it didn't say a definitive time or what they were supposed to pay for or whatever. So we agreed on that they would put us up in a hotel while they did the testing. But so here they made the good faith to do the testing, and then they didn't help us with resolving it after they, you know, they're like, here's what we found, good luck. And so that was what we felt was wrong. We felt that they had the power, they had the litigators to help us, and they didn't. And we saw where there was other cases in our community.
Excuse me. So they basically said, yes, you have a problem. And then did not proceed to help you move into a safer home.
Yeah.
And what, you must have asked them to do that. What did they say when you asked them?
This is not a named peril, was their words.
Oh, it's not.
You see the Allstate commercials where they talk about all the unnamed perils they've covered, so that's kind of funny.
Unnamed perils. So was there any language inside the insurance policy that talked about unnamed perils?
That's the part you would be better at, and I'm not because I'm not a lawyer.
Did you read your policy? Did you read your policy? Did you highlight that phrase everywhere you saw it?
What I go back to with that is that if I paid for an environmental rider and it ended up being something that was environmental, why would that matter?
Well, I will bet you 2-1 that they will come at it. This was not an environmental, that this was caused by industry, and they're going to do an effort to separate the two.
Well, I guess I just said good luck back to them.
Yeah.
And,
well, let's hope the judge has some kind of common sense about this, because this is the issue. Let's just talk. I mean, is yours the first case of, that you've heard of in your neighborhood that has, you know, have you heard of other successes?
I do know there was a case that was sealed, and I do know that those people were able to get their health care covered. I don't know if they got health care monitoring, but they did get it. It's been told to me that they got their health care covered, but I'm only able to know that now because the plaintiff that was the key plaintiff that would have been, like, I guess myself with the people under her, she died now. So that kind of changes the sealing of the case a little. That doesn't fully change it.
Well, there's still a paper trail without, I mean, wherever, what happened to her is all on paper too. I mean, you have medical records, you have documents that she's filed.
But I don't know that they took that approach. Of course, that's not my only defendant. I have 29.
Wow.
There are, so there's a list of many players who have played a key role in this big problem of RICO, and not just...
So it's more than just the insurance company.
Right.
Is it any government agencies?
Yeah.
Like, so you're suing EPA, the chemical companies, your insurance company?
No, I've asked for the discovery process to give us things like the chemical companies, because... You know, that should have been a process of what EPA did for us when EPA was given the case, and it wasn't.
Oh,
so I've asked
really?
For that in discovery. And I feel that that's part of the criminal RICO in some light.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, why didn't they do that when they do it for, okay, for instance, I know of some home builders in our area that, and developers that changed the land. And then they started having, like, you know, silt is like, it's basically another name for mud, I say, like a fancy name for mud. And it starts flowing down, getting into the water system, off the curb. You've maybe seen it happen at a site when you're driving around and there's construction going on. Well, there's an EPA requirement that you have to put up silt fencing to hold that back, to keep it out of the streets, to keep it out of the water system. But, you know, sometimes it's really enforced and sometimes it isn't. And I know of a case where it did get enforced, and it charged a home builder like thousands of dollars, and because basically he didn't buy this fence that he could have bought that is made up of a trash bag type plastic material and stakes ever so often that hold it up to try to make a barrier. Between that runoff when we have a storm that takes that fresh
or something. He could have done something, put sandbags even, something.
Right.
Better than
right.
Zero.
There's different processes that they allow you to use, and that was just one. Right. So, and he was fined for that coming over and getting into. And then, you know, everyone was told that that home builder was at fault for it, and so, you know, so there's inconsistency there with what happened with our case and what happened with that case. Now, there's inconsistency because ours was not a certain defined area, and there's holes in the pipes that could have come from a large area, you know, maybe larger than that instance I've given you an example of. But we have some enforcement in some areas, and we don't in other areas. And I feel like that's a part of discovery to understand why. And I feel like there is something wrong with that. And I even...
Wouldn't that be ironic if your case busted open the whole corruption underbelly of our government all the way out through the federal courts, like just ripped it all apart? Wouldn't that be interesting? Because really what you're asking in this discovery is a trail of why decisions were made that allowed families to get sick.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it's about. It's kind of like what happened in Flint. I mean, in Flint, it took several years, but people went to jail over their decisions in government. Government officials, people have gone to jail. They haven't fixed the situation, but they have gone. They have, I mean, the courts take faster. I don't know how that works, but I don't get why we haven't, like your community, this is not a secret where you were living anymore that has happened. So right. Have they corrected the situation?
I don't believe they have.
Right.
They did build a new water plant, but when I went to those meetings, they talked about using chloramines in the water plant, and chloramines actually elevate those chemicals, and it says on the EPA information, and I included that in my complaint. They didn't listen to experts that came in from other states and advised them to use it's granular activated carbon to absorb the heightened chemicals out of the water, and they discussed with them the problems of doing chlorine burns and how you should do something different than a chlorine burn, and how that's another whole problem, and how that elevates those chemicals we were exposed to, but it also exposes people. You're basically like drinking swimming pool shock, you know? And so they said, you know, we need to control the bacteria, but there's other ways to do that. And they gave them advice, and it was one of Aaron Brockovich's crew. But I did not see where they included that. I don't know if those were amended at the end, but it did not seem like they would be. And it seemed very, it seemed like we've decided we're going to do these things. And they brought it to the public. And they said, we've decided we're going to do these things. We weren't even going to tell you there was a problem until these people found this. And so now I guess we have to tell you this is what we're going to do about the problem. And it wasn't like, can we work together to talk through this plan and make sure we've covered all the areas we need to cover? We had people standing up saying, why are you going to still use fluoride while we're making a new water plant? Why don't we not use fluoride anymore? This is how fluoride combines with the chloramines and makes both of them more toxic. So why are you still going to use fluoride? And are you a pharmacist? Are you a chemist? Why do you have your little water guys pouring fluoride in the water plant? And so those things came up in the meeting, but they were still pretty much like, well, this is our plan, and we just had some sort of duty to bring it to you, and we're not going to let you vote on it, even though we're a democracy city and we're supposed to let you vote on it. We're not going to let you vote on it. We just wanted to be like we're you know, meeting this one thing to say we brought it to you. So, you know, that felt so like not a democracy. And I'm not a big, you know, I was just a mom and a journalist, and I'm not a big, I didn't cover government but that just felt so wrong to just, you know, the things we'd learned in school from history, that they could present this big water plan that would affect all of these people every day, the way they function, the way their life is.
It's so much. I mean, when we dig into how deep and how it's not just corrupt, it's beyond that. It's just disregard for human life. Like, it is really, something has gone wrong with how our institutions, since the EPA, it's almost like the polluters, once we won the environmental movement and we got the EPA, and I remember when rivers were on fire. When I was a young woman, there was rivers on fire. Children died in going into tunnels just having fun. They were so toxic, they would find dead kids. I mean, this wasn't it was really shocking. And so we did get we felt the Environmental Protection Agency was really there for us. And what happened was the polluters worked through government to strangle the baby and basically underfunded it. And to the point where the government said, okay, well, we'll just take your word for it. So now a lot of what happens with the government is in the nuclear industry, the chemical industry, they ask the people that they're supposed to test to do the testing. This is how we get, and this is really, at the heart of it, I mean, if we're, that's what I meant, wouldn't it be interesting to see if your case on the RICO Act went all the way up through Congress? Because honestly, this is like the mafia inside Congress. And this whole, I don't want to get off on a tangent on something else, but the whole sexual scandal and people coming out, it's about power. It is not about sex. It's about using your power over people. And that's what this whole thing of underfunding the EPA is all about. Like, okay, you guys want to have an Environmental Protection Agency? We're just not going to fund it. And it'll be take co-opted. So...
Well, Bravo. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Like Flint, you mentioned the people that went to jail, and they did go to jail for abusing their power. And I look at these people who I've talked to that didn't come send someone out to see how sick my son was and that he couldn't get out of bed, you know, that didn't get my whole side of the story. And that fits back to these stories you're hearing about these women who reported people of power.
Yeah.
And here, but then on the other side of that, I was an upstanding citizen. And if I made a wrong allegation against them, I would be reprimanded for that. When I found wrong allegations against my family and reported, hey, there's nothing that makes me not an upstanding citizen. I have, you know, done a lot of things for my community. I'm well known. And I have done them in good faith and to help. And here I have these false things being put in my record or this false allegation against me. And, you know, if those tables were turned and I did that on a senator or someone, I would be reprimanded for it. But they weren't reprimanded. Mm-hmm. And they did this to it. And I could prove that and I could show that. So I don't think it's out of line that you're bringing those other things back up. They go together, and it is a part of this whole ball of mess.
Well, it is the heart of it, the RICO Act, like for real. That's a really, I'm really glad that you've taken this on. I wonder how it'll, so what's the progress? You filed it, so how long will it take for you to get to court, or do you guys have a docket number yet or anything like that?
No, not yet. So I don't know what that's going to mean. I know how they delayed our Social Security stuff forever. I know how that can be.
Well, are there judges sitting in these places? Do they actually have working judges in the Western District Court? Because I know a lot of judges' yes. positions are not filed.
Yes, I do have a judge assigned.
Yay, good.
So I was happy for that because I know I could have come up against an obstacle of power just to get that piece done. But I haven't so far. So I think the world is ready for it. I think it's fell into the right time slot.
Uh-huh.
And if I would have done it a long time ago, it wouldn't have been in the right place. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't have had all the information and evidence. And that's a good thing about RICO too, is it's not a, you know, what I've learned on this environmental thing is 2-year statute of limitations on anything environmental is a joke. Mm-hmm. That law needs to be changed. That law needs to be changed because these things wax and wean and come out over time. Mm-hmm. And
kind of like nuclear. That's very true. That's exactly right. Same thing. It's not like it just happens one time. It's not like you burned your skin and your skin heals.
Right, and you find out it was underneath, and then there's damage underneath, and you find that out 3 years down the road, and that's past the statute of limitations. Well, they say, well, then there's discovery, and it starts over. But I think when we're talking environmental, it's more like RICO doesn't really have a statute of limitations because these things can happen over decades, and they like it for you it to be like almost 10 years before you can say it really is RICO, because it's not like something happened in a certain period of time where people keep harassing these people.
I get what you're saying. Like,
but then it happened again. So why did it happen again? And that's what mine shows too. It happened, you know, in Broken Arrow. This exact thing with my child's school system happened in Broken Arrow. And then we moved to another public school system. That exact thing happened again with different culpable persons. So that is RICO, you know, and that is organized crime. Because why? Where's the memo? Where's the memo that says, well, these people found this stuff in Broken Arrow and we don't like them, so this is what we're going to do to them here? And then you go to the other place and they say, yep, these people are still around and we still don't like them. So this is what we're going to do to them here. And gosh, they think they're so smart doing these things behind the scenes, but they repeat what they've done before in some
way. You said your children's schools?
Yeah.
We have about, we have 4 minutes left, but maybe we should talk about that on the show. Can you do real quickly what happened at the schools that made it look like that they were like, this was a pattern that was set?
Sure. Just to dummy it down really simply, Broken Arrow Public Schools, my son was on an IEP, which is an individualized education plan. He had become very ill and was struggling to, he was having spiking blood pressures every day, and that would affect the way he was able to move. It would affect his breathing. He would get, you know, sometimes he would get cyanosis, which is blue lips. And he was just a determined child, and he wanted to be at school. He wanted to be with his friends, and he would keep pushing himself until then he, you know, was very sick or in a life-threatening state, about to have a heart attack. He finally did have a heart attack.
Wow.
And when he was 18, 19, by pushing himself, you know, and trying to be what he's supposed to be again. And basically at some point we stepped in and we started with a 504 to get him accommodations at school so he could go to the nurse. He could go to the bathroom 10 times the day he needed to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And get accommodations like that. And then basically, when we had the experts come in our home, find the things, relate them to health, we had another IEP meeting, and they changed his IEP. They tried to just make it look like he didn't have a real health problem, that it was psychological. But lucky for me, I'm thinking, we had gone to the same behavioral health person since our oldest daughter got sick, and she told us her problems were physical, not mental, and it was our duty as her parents to find the physical cause. And she backed us. And then she separately tested our son. Hey, he's got the physical too.
Wow.
And he's upset that you're giving the older child a little more credit than him.
So you guys have a very strong RICO case. You have a strong RICO case. That is really good advice that you got. Well, Erica, we have about a minute left, and I want to thank you for coming on, and thank you for your courage, for real. This is the journey that many of us have to start, because there's millions of Americans who are affected, and if people start taking action, we will get quick results, because the one thing politicians don't like is having to work, and they don't want to have to lose their jobs. So
lastly, I do need to say what it actually was the schools both contacted the doctors, both cities, and
directly.
Yes, directly. Even though at the second one, I thought I got smarter and wrote a letter and said they were not allowed to ever speak with our doctor without our permission. They contacted the doctors, threatened the doctors. Who carries the license?
Well, we've got 10 seconds left,
the
ma'am.
The state. The state carries the license.
And well, look, thank you so much, ma'am. We will talk with you soon. We're about to get cut off. Put your courage behind you.